As Christians have said for hundreds, maybe thousands of years, every Easter, he is risen. That's what we're celebrating today, is the fact that Jesus died and then rose from the grave. But I don't know, maybe you heard about the tragedy that happened. Three blondes died, went to heaven. I've got two blondes in my house, so I'm allowed to tell blonde jokes, all right? Three blondes died, they went to heaven, and St. Peter met them at the gate, as St. Peter always does in these jokes, and he said to them, "I'd love to welcome you into heaven, you just have to answer one simple question for me. What is Easter?" The first blonde said, oh, I know this one. Easter, it's that holiday in November when we eat a lot of turkey and we go around and we say what we're thankful for, right? Peter's like, no, that's not what Easter is. And the second blonde is like, oh, I know it. Easter, it's that holiday in December. It's when we put up a tree and we hang lights and we exchange presents, right? And Peter's like, no, that's not what Easter is. And the third blonde is like, I know this one. And Peter's like, really? She's like, yes, I know this one. Easter is the holiday in spring that corresponds to the Jewish Passover. And Peter's like, yes, go on. She says, it is a commemoration of the death of Jesus Christ, Messiah of Israel. He died on the cross, and then they put him into the grave. And Peter says, go on. And then they rolled a big rock in front of it. Okay. And then on the third day, they rolled the rock away. Peter says, yes. And then Jesus came out, and he saw his shadow, and there was six more weeks of winter. Lots of people get confused about Easter, right? It's something that maybe you don't quite understand why we celebrate. It's this event that happened so long ago, 2,000 years ago. I mean, it's amazing and all that. Someone died, and then they came back to life. That's pretty amazing. But if you think about it, that happens kind of every day in hospitals, right? Saw a story about a woman in West Virginia a few years ago. She had a heart attack. She went to the hospital. She died. She had no vital signs for 17 hours. 17 hours, and then she came back to life. 17 hours later with no vital signs. It's amazing, right? So why don't we celebrate that once a year, you know? It's an amazing event. Why don't we take off of work and just like eat West Virginia food, you know? Barbecue raccoon, I don't know what they eat in West Virginia, but why don't we do that? Why don't we celebrate every amazing event like that? Here's why. Because this amazing event that took place 2,000 years ago that we celebrate in Easter, it wasn't just an event. It wasn't just something that happened in history. Easter is a present reality. It's not just something that happened a long time ago. It changes everything about the way that we live life today. Everything. And there's a verse in the book of Galatians that explains that really well. This is a letter written by a guy named Paul to a group of people called the Galatians. The verse is Galatians 2:20. We'll have it up on the screen. You can read it. Paul says, I have been crucified with Christ, and it is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life that I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. And that right there, that is the whole point of Easter. Okay, actually, that's the whole point of Christianity right there. If you want to boil down our faith to a couple of sentences, you really couldn't do much better than what Paul did right there. Those verses, that's just packed full of really profound things. Like the very beginning, look at what he says in the very beginning. I have been crucified with Christ. In other words, it's as if I died with Christ. I don't know, maybe that's still a little confusing for you. Maybe Paul can clear that up. Look at what he says just the verse before that. He says, I died to the law so that I might live to God. I died to the law. You're like, still not making a whole lot of sense. Well, think about it this way. The law is just the things that you do to make yourself a good person, right? We all want to be good people. And so we all have a list of things that we think we need to do in order to be good people, like the golden rule, right? We all pretty much believe that. Treat other people the way that you want them to treat you. Hold open the door at Starbucks for someone the way that you would want them to hold the door open for you. right? Even if you hold the door open and you think it's just for one person, but then the whole store decides to leave all at once and you got 100 people streaming past and you're standing there for like 3 hours waiting and holding the door. You're going to stand there, right? Because you're a good person. You're not going to just decide halfway through that line of people to let the door go and just slam in somebody's face. You're a good person. You're not going to do that. And the whole time that you're standing there holding that door open, that's exactly what you're thinking, right? I'm a good person. That's why I'm doing this. No, I'm a great person. That's why I'm doing this. That's what you're thinking the whole time. And you're thinking, everybody must agree with me, right? Even God. God must agree with me that I'm a good person. Look at what I'm doing right here. That is life according to the law. That's living according to the law. You can even just call it like the law of relationships, you know? The law of relationships says, if you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And that's the way that we live in our relationship with God a lot of times. If I do good things for him, he'll do good things for me. And Paul says, no, I died to that law. That law was crucified. All of those calculations that I was doing to figure out where I am with God, you guys know those calculations, right? Like, let's see, I was driving to work this morning, and I let 3 people into my lane on the H1. That was pretty good. Oh, but then I lied to my boss when he asked if that report was done. Did those 3 good things cancel out the 1 bad thing? I don't know. If I carry the 1, you know, let me see if I can do this. Paul says, no, I died to all of that trigonometry, okay? I died to all of that. And guys, that is such good news. It's such good news to know that all of the worst parts about you, all the things that you're most ashamed of, all the things in your past that make you kind of twitch when you think about them, right? Those things that when you remember, you're just like, oh, I can't believe I did that. All of those things were crucified with Christ, nailed to the cross. All the things that make me most ashamed, from the very first lie that I told to my parents, to the worst mistake that I made in high school, to the meanest thing that I ever said to my wife. All of those things are dead and buried. The worst parts of me are dead. But then that also means, so are the best parts of me. All of the things that used to make me feel really arrogant, all the things that made me kind of puff myself up when I thought about them, all the things that made me feel really self-satisfied about myself, those got killed off too. Those were crucified just as much. It's dead, it's buried. Because when I put my faith in Jesus, I put my faith in what he does, not in what I can do. And that's why Paul says in the next part, it is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. It's no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And so everything that's true of Christ is true of me. Everything that was ever given to Christ is now given to me. He is living my life, and what that means is now I'm living his with access to everything that he has. Kind of like giving your kid one of your credit cards. I don't know if you've ever done that before. When my oldest son, Caleb, was about 8 years old, it was the first time I ever tried it. We're at McDonald's, and we're eating, and he decides he wants another cheeseburger. He really wants another cheeseburger, and I really want to not have to get up. And so I'm like, here, just take my credit card. Just go up. Just give it to them. Ask for a cheeseburger. They'll give it to you. And he's like, he looks really scared, and he's like, Dad, is that legal? Are you sure we can do that? And I'm like, I don't know, actually, but give it a try, all right? Let's just see what happens. So he takes my credit card. He goes up to the cashier at McDonald's, and he asks for a cheeseburger, gives him the credit card. The cashier looks at the card, looks at him, and he's like, so you're Mr. Dirks, huh? And Caleb lowers his voice like 2 octaves, and he goes, yes, I am. And the cashier looks at the card, looks at him again. He's like, good enough for me. And so he swipes it. Gives him the cheeseburger, and Caleb turns around. He's like, Dad, it worked, you know? He couldn't believe it. That is life with Jesus Christ living in me. I have access to everything that he's got. I know, Maybe you still feel like it sounds kind of mystical, you know? I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. Sounds like some kind of Jedi chant, you know? I'm one with the force and the force is with me. I'm one with the force and the force is with me. It sounds like something you say just to kind of psych yourself up. Something you say to make yourself feel better, give yourself a shot of confidence. But Paul's going, no. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about some kind of psycho-mystical thing going on here. He says, this is the life that I now live in the flesh. In the flesh. We're talking about the real world still, okay? The real world with crazy traffic on the H1, with rent payments that are way too high, with cars that break down way too quick, with bosses that are way over demanding, with kids who won't sleep, with in-laws who are passive aggressive, with neighbors who drive you crazy. We're still talking about all that. Life in the flesh means we're talking about the same earthly, everyday lives that we've always led, except Paul says, now I live it by faith in the Son of God. I'm living the same life I always led, but now I'm living it with faith in the Son of God. The Son of God is living in me. We're not just talking about some random dude who lived in the Middle East 2,000 years ago. We're talking about the Son of God in me. Think about that. There's some crazy things happening around me all the time. My life is a blur most days. I'm getting shaken around a lot. But if I've got the Son of God living in me, then there's something to root me, right? There's something that's not going to be shaken in my life. It's kind of like this monkey pod tree out there. I don't know if you can see it through the windows right now, but I love that tree. I love that monkey pod. But sometimes when it gets really windy, the top of that tree, it's just crazy. Like in January, I don't know if you remember that crazy Saturday we had in January. We had 75 mile an hour winds coming through Kaimuki. I came here to Liholiho. We had a church dinner here that Saturday night. And it was just craziness. On 10th Avenue, I literally saw a stop sign that got ripped out of the ground by the wind and is flying down 10th Avenue, okay? Small children were flying down 10th Avenue. It was just craziness that day. And I got here and I look up at that tree, and up at the top, it's just a blur of leaves and branches. It's just this swirling vortex of death up at the top, all right? It's like a Marvel movie up there, you know? Every Marvel movie, there's a swirling vortex of death in the sky. That's how you know you're watching a Marvel movie. That's what I saw up there, just this vortex of death. I thought that tree was going to come down on us, but then I looked down at the root. I looked down at the trunk, and it's not even moving a millimeter. Not even a millimeter. That's what life is like with the Son of God living in me. Life is crazy. It's chaotic. It's confusing. But if you look at the root, it's not moving even a millimeter. It's solid, which means I'm not going to be as worried about the things that I used to be worried about. I'm not going to be obsessed about the things that I used to be obsessed about. I've got the Son of God to depend on. The Son of God, and this is amazing, the Son of God who loved me, as Paul says. Think about how amazing that is. The Son of God loves me. Think about if you heard one day that the CEO of your corporation really loves you. Like he's heard about you. Your boss calls you in to his office one day just to tell you, hey, the CEO, he's heard about what you're doing over there, whatever you're doing, and he loves it. He really loves you. And you're like, the CEO? I've never even met the guy. He works in some building on Bishop Street, right? I've never even been there. I don't even know the guy's name. Who's the CEO of this corporation? I don't know. He's like, well, the CEO knows your name. And he loves what you're doing. He loves you. Think about how tall you would be walking all day that day, right? Well, guess what? The CEO of the universe loves you. The CEO of the universe loves you. And it's even better than that. If you notice what Paul says, it's not in the present tense, it's in the past tense. The Son of God loved me. And what that means is that he loved me before I even had a chance to prove that I was worthy of his love. He started loving me before I was born. He started loving me before the world even began. What that means is there's nothing that I can do to make him love me more, and there's nothing that I can do to make him love me less. He loved me just because he decided to. Just because he decided to. And here's how he proved it. Here's how you know that he loved me. Paul says he gave himself for me. He died for me. For me. Maybe you've heard about how Jesus died for the world. Have you ever thought about how Jesus died for you? For me. He didn't just die for some massive group of people. He didn't just die for some faceless crowd. Jesus died for me. There's 8 personal pronouns in this verse, and guess what? None of them are plural. Every single one of them is singular. It's not we and us, it's me. It's all I. Think about that. Some people think they're okay with God just because they come from a religious family, but Jesus didn't die for your family. He died for you. Singular you. Some people think they're okay with God because they come to church every once in a while, but Jesus didn't just die for a church. He died for me. He gave himself up for me. And if Jesus died for me, what that means is that Jesus died instead of me. He died in my place. Here's why. I thought that I was a pretty good person. All growing up, I thought that. I did nice things for people all the time. But at some point in my life, I realized all these good things that I was doing for people, I was still really doing them for myself. Because the primary reason why I was doing all these good things for people was so that they would think I was a good person. That's why I was doing it. And so I was still just living for myself. I was doing it all out of my own strength. I was completely ignoring the God who made me. And so God said to me, okay, if that's what you want, if you want to live your life apart from me, that's fine, but you're going to have to do that for eternity. If you want to live life on your own, you can do that, but that's going to be forever. Guys, that's what death is. That's eternal death right there. Jesus, the Son of God, he saw that that's what was coming for me. He saw that that's the path that I was going down. And so he came and he gave himself for me. The Son of God came and died that death that I deserve in my place. And then when he rose from the grave 3 days later, he gave me his life. And so that's why Paul can say, Christ lives in me. Christ lives in me. And if that's true, then there's a lot of things in my life that are going to start changing. Later on in this letter, Paul says that if Jesus is living in you, then you're going to have this whole long list of things that start changing, like love and joy and peace. Love and joy and peace. Isn't that what we really want in life? I want to experience more love. I want to experience more joy. I want to experience more peace. And so that's why we're going to be going through this letter for the next couple of months on our Sunday mornings. If you don't have a church home, if there's not a church that you regularly worship at, we would love for you to join us here at Harbor Church. Because over the next couple of months, we're going to be looking at this book, this letter, thinking about love and joy and peace. How do we get more of that in our lives? Well, it's only through Jesus who loved me and gave himself up for me. It's only if I welcome him to come live inside of me. And so here's the question. Have you done that? Have you taken that step? Have you allowed Jesus to crucify you? Have you asked him to kill off the things that you're ashamed of and kill off the things that you're arrogant about? Have you asked him to come live inside of you? Easter's a great day for that to happen. It's a great day to take that step. So if you'd like to find out more about how to make that happen in your life, after this service, there's going to be people up in the front with name tags who would be happy to answer any questions that you have, happy to talk more with you about it, happy to pray with you if that's what you want. Jesus wants to live inside of you, to give you access to everything that he has as the Son of God. Don't let that offer pass you by. Let's pray together.